Thanks, Diana. Now it's time for Backyard Archaeology, where I spoke to Paul Ledger this month about pollen.
Well, pollen is it's a reproductive part of flowering plants, and we study it because we can infer past vegetational change and past environments from the study of pollen.
So we look at pollen, and it tells us a bit about the environmental record, but the vegetation, you know, trees, bushes.
Yeah, it does, but we can also use it to infer human impacts in an environment. We look really at how certain plants are exploited by humans, or we can look at the record of trees, pollen, and if that disappears or starts to decline in the record, we can infer that humans are perhaps cutting the trees and creating land for arable agriculture or pastoral agriculture.
So you have what is called a pollen record, and these diagrams I find quite difficult to interpret. I mean, you've got all these squiggly lines. Can you just explain what a pollen diagram is? Because I think most archaeologists don't know what the hell they are either.
Okay, so we count on a slide. We prepare a homogenized sample of pollen, effectively, from a peat core, and we then create a sample and put it onto a slide, and we count up to 500 grains of pollen. Then we count it relative to a spike. We call it a spike, which is something we add, which is a spore, and we can then use that to determine the concentration of pollen in that sample. And so all pollen diagrams you see are all a percentage of a certain species out of the 500 that we've counted. So all of the species, the taxa that we count, they're all relative to one another, as really. So out of 500, I may count 100 grass grains at the beginning of a core, which would represent 20% of the total. As the core progresses, I may see that there's an increase in grass grains, so maybe 300 out of 500, which would suggest perhaps that there's agriculture or there's hay fields being created, which is something that I look at in my research.
In your research as well, Paul, you refer to grass. Can you just describe broadly what types of vegetation we're looking at? I know you have all these fancy Latin names, which I can never get my head around, but you're looking at grasses.
Well, I look at birch, which is a tree. I look at willow, which is, in this case, we're used to it being a sort of a tree in the British Isles, but it's more of a shrub where I look in Greenland. And I look at other weeds, weedy plants mostly, such things as pollen from chickweeds and sorrels, and these things are good indicators of human impact in a landscape.
And apart from pollen, you mentioned this word spores. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk a bit about those as well?
So spores, I look at two types of spores, in fact. One type, which are from non-flowering plants, which is their reproductive arm of these plants instead of having pollen. Another type of spore I look at is from fungi that grow on a variety of material in the environment.
By that, is that a euphemism for excrement of certain animals?
Well, some of them do, yeah. But some of them just grow on decaying wood and other decaying organic matter. But I'm specifically interested in ones that grow on the excrement.
So cow dung, sheep dung. So you get a rise in spores at one time, and then you can say, oh, this matches the decline of trees, the increase of grass. Presto, that equals.
Well, it's spores from coprophilus fungi in particular. They would rise if there's perhaps animals in a landscape. These things do grow on excrement from herbivores that are not actually farmed, but they also grow on ones that people have. So if you see an increase of them, very sharp increase, tied with other factors such as a rise in perhaps cereal pollen or grass pollen, a decline in tree pollen, you could start to suggest that there are humans active in the landscapes. It's a drawing together lines of evidence, really, to support one another. That's how this analysis works.
Well, this remarkable field, which is known as palynology, the study of pollen, is something I'm getting to grips with myself. And in front of me now, we've got a microscope set up with a slide on it. And Paul has got what is supposed to be a pollen grain in the field of view. And I'm just going to take a look now. He's found it. And is that it, Paul?
Yep, right there in the middle, right in the centre.
It looks like a crushed pea.
Yeah, that's a grass pollen grain, and it does kind of look like a crushed pea. It looks like a crushed pea with an eye in some ways.
It's not winking at me, but there is an eye, you are right.
Yep.
Now, how is that pollen grain different from other pollen grains. How do you distinguish them?
Well, predominantly, we distinguish them, first of all, they're based on, they have apertures in them, which it can be in the form of narrow slits on the grain or circular holes, like on the grass grain. They have varying numbers of these, so that's the first distinction we look at, to separate them into ones with holes, effectively, or furrows. And then we look at other elements, such as sculpturing features on the surface of the grain, and then it starts to become quite difficult, which is part of what I do all day.
So you look for holes and furrows in crushed peas, and then you distinguish the more complicated pollen based on what you describe as sculptural features, you know, like spikes and funky-looking grains. Now, is this an all-day activity? I mean, describe how you would go about looking at a pollen slide. Can you just do 500 an hour? How does it take? How long does it take?
It depends. Sometimes I can count a slide in a couple of hours. If the concentration is very good, there's a lot of pollen, and if the preservation of it's very good and it's not degraded in any way, then I can count them very quickly. And if there's not too many different taxa that I'm not familiar with, then it can be a very fast job, but sometimes it can be very slow. If it's deteriorated, if the concentration is low, if there's a number of unfamiliar types, for instance, it could take me quite some time. I work in Greenland, and the flora there is quite limited, so if I was to come and look at British Isles pollen, it would probably take me a couple of days to count one slide. But in Greenland, I can do it very quickly now.
So you're looking for the human impact on the environment through the study of pollen. So this is precisely what you were saying before. Mm-hmm. Trees go up, grass goes down, or trees go down, grass go up, mm-hmm. spores from excrement, whatever. What I'm interested in, Paul, is where this pollen comes from. You keep talking about peat cores mm-hmm. and mires. Now, why is this important to the study of pollen? Can't I just go in a field and dig a hole and get some?
Well, we use peat basically because it accumulates slowly. Every year there's usually an accumulation of peat, and the pollen that's in the atmosphere or in the environment will land on the surface of this peat, and it will then effectively be sealed off from everything else, and that's a layer. When that's deposited, we can say this is from a set period in time. If we looked in a soil profile, for instance, these, you can look at pollen from them, but they're often subject to problems with after they've been deposited. They can be eroded or mixed, and this is something that also happens in lakes, where lakes are often used to study pollen, lake sediments, but these can also be subject to processes such as sediment mixing, and then it can lead to a blur of the pollen record.
So these cores are representing a history of the local environment. Like you say, they're a stratigraphy of what's gone on. They're frozen in time, so to speak, and sealed within these peat deposits that accumulate. Yeah. So is it quite difficult to reconstruct an environment where there is no peat nearby, there's no wet deposits?
Yeah, I mean, it would be then in that respect. I mean, you could, like I said, you could look at soil profiles, and you can even look at pollen from archaeological deposits in buildings. People have done this, but it's the interpretations are a lot more complicated, and then there's not as much that you can say from this. You can perhaps indicate what plants were growing in the area, but you can't really then start talking back in time and be certain. It's like in archaeology, you can't be certain if it's been disturbed, and it's all to do with, how do you describe it in archaeology?
We tend to ignore it. So, I mean, I'm going to leave you alone now, Paul, to your fascinating task, of counting pollen for the rest of today. And I'm sure you'll have some fascinating results by the end of it. So you're going to be reconstructing this local area of Greenland and finishing off in the next couple of years. Do you think you'll be able to add a new insight?
Hopefully, yeah. I'd hope I'd be able to get a better idea of the chronology of these farms in this area. That's what I'm really aiming to do, first and foremost, yeah.
Well, best of luck. Thank you, Paul.
Cheers.
Paul Ledger, PhD candidate in the Department of Geography and Environment at Aberdeen University. And he was speaking to Tom Birch. And that's it for Naked Archaeology this month. If you want to get in touch about anything, then email us. The address is archaeology, and you can spell that the American way if you like, and that's at thenakedscientists.com. A big thanks to all our interviewees this month and our researcher, who was Duncan Howitt Marshall.
Coming to a trench near you. Naked Archaeology.